Welcome to The Sound of Economics and to this episode of the Backstage series. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, the head of communications and events of Bruegel, the economic think tank based in Brussels. And I'm pleased to have here with me Marek Dabrowski, a non-resident fellow here at Bruegel, and also Hilib Wyszylinski. I hope that I am pronouncing it correctly, Hilib. Who is the executive director of the Center for Economic Strategy in Kiev. We are here for in the backstage of our event that we held today, which was held in cooperation with the Center for Economic Strategy. So we would like to thank Hilib, not just for being here to this episode, but actually to have organized that event together. And we discussed issues related to the Ukrainian economy and the way forward after a year of political turbulence. A little bit of introduction about that. I mean, this year, all eyes have been on Ukraine as the country has been going to the polls twice. After electing a president in April, Ukraine will vote again for a new parliament. And this new government will be in charge of the Ukrainian economy for the next 5 years. This political change is unfolding as the Ukrainian economy is slowly recovering from the deep economic crisis of 2014-15 and is under the pressure of sovereign debt and an aggressive Russia. What are the main challenges for the Ukrainian economy in the coming years, and what should the new government do to meet these challenges? How could the EU and other international partners help in putting Ukraine on a path to sustainable economic growth? Those are the key questions that have been debated in a very interesting panel. And I'm asking Hilib and Marek their first takes on those discussions and what do they think about those challenges.
Yeah, the key issues that we discussed was which is the role of macroeconomic stability, as like all crises in Ukraine, they started from, like, in fact, destroying this macroeconomic stability. There were financial crises. We had depreciation of the national currency. We had blows to the banking system. We had episodes of very high inflation and certainly destruction of real incomes of the households. So, with the peak of sovereign debt repayment that we have in this and upcoming 2 years, when Ukraine has to pay $20 billion, which is roughly the same as all gross international reserves of the Ukrainian central bank, we need to be very careful in devising our economic policies, in working with international creditors, and generally it is to more extend the issue of this political turbulence and the issue of, for example, unpopular reforms that are needed. No, like, Ukraine is not in the situation like Greece was at. Ukraine currently, as Marek mentioned during today's event, like, we already incurred a lot of pain. And like, what we are trying to do now is to prevent another episode of pain.
So to prevent those other episodes of pain, Marek, what do you think the steering of the economic policy in Ukraine should take into account?
Yeah, discussion about pain is not easy because looking for some historical counterfactual scenario, one could say that some reforms were done faster 3 or 2 years ago, perhaps less pain and less reform effort would be needed now. And more results of this first reforms effort done 2014-15-16 would be seen today. I don't want to say that Ukraine didn't reform its economy and political system, but agenda remain unfinished. Actually, reform process stopped in the second half of 2017. Already at that time, election campaign started. Government had problems with majority in parliament. So basically, from that time, we have some current management moving through, but no so much reforms. And looking realistically for political timetable, of course, another probably 3-4 months, maybe even a little more, will take before parliamentary election will be conducted in July, and then process of forming new government. But I hope that still and, by the end of this year, the new government can restart reforms. And I agree that the most painful issue already behind, but this effort which was done by the previous government must be sustained and continue, first to avoid any new crisis, macroeconomic crisis, and second also to finally see results of this reform process, especially higher growth than now is 2-3%. It's too little to recover from this long period of stagnation, of recession, and also to have more visible increase of population income and also quality of life and improve business climate.
So, I mean, Marek points out the difficulties in terms of timeline, but also the challenges in moving on the reform agenda in the context, the political context, but also the overall economic context of Ukraine. I mean, Hilib, if you would have to point out the 2 or 3 main reforms that you think they should be implemented sooner than later, which ones would you mention?
We have, in fact, like the mix of both economic policy reforms and not economic policy reforms. Like the second bunch is really very important. Like when we look on the list of obstacles to foreign direct investors in Ukraine, we for 4 years in a row, like we help in conducting the survey of foreign investors, we see 2 reasons, like 2 obstacles. The first is widespread corruption, and second is low trust to judiciary. Even despite low intensity military conflict with Russia, this conflict is currently on fourth place. And we need to wholeheartedly finish those reforms that are needed to reintroduce the rule of law, because investment risks are mainly in this area. When businesses do not trust judiciary in resolving business conflicts and also conflicts with the government, they expect that there could be the harassment coming from unreformed law enforcement agencies. So this non-economic policy part is really very important.
So if I may interrupt you, I mean, on the issue of the rule of law, I mean, as you point correctly, that is not just an economic side, but it goes beyond in legislation, but also in creating the infrastructure. In order, it's not enough to make good laws, let's put it like that, but we need to have the infrastructure that makes possible to respect those laws.
Yeah, like what Ukraine lacks, and which is to a large extent a heritage of communist times, is lack of independent institutions. Like it was 30 years ago, like people expect that there is a president on top and he is like a general secretary of the Communist Party who makes all decisions, and then these decisions are just respected by the whole vertical. But like it is not working, it should not work like this in market economy. Like there should be independent institutions, judiciary should be independent from the politicians, and like there should be independent regulations. regulators, and there should be in a country with high corruption as such as Ukraine, we need to have independent anti-corruption authorities that are not linked to those corrupt parts of judiciary, of law enforcement agencies, etc. So really, like, we need this specific part of the infrastructure.
It's almost not just a matter of providing the tools in terms of legislation again and enforcement, but it's also somehow a change in the mindset of the regulators about how the implementation of certain rules should be made in the ground. What do you think, Marek?
Well, I think that is still matter of legislation in many areas, starting from constitution. In my opinion, constitution is in many respects dysfunctional, for example, what concerns forming government, division of responsibilities between president, government, and parliament. This should be changed. And be clear here, I think that would change even more towards parliamentary system. I am not big fan of presidential systems, especially in our part of the world. And the same concerns constitutional changes regarding, for example, decentralization of the country, regional and local government. Also further strengthening of judiciary and making it really independent, or national bank making it really independent. But then is another part, which is implementation. And this concerns both type of mindset and culture, political culture, but also some awareness of society. What Klip mentioned correctly, people still, by inertia, try to expect from president or from government that they will solve all their problems. While in democratic society of rule of law, many of these problems should be solved by courts, by local government, by regional government, by other independent institutions. So this kind of changing awareness is necessary for the whole society.
I look at Hlib because he's on the ground, and maybe it's a little bit more of a political question about the newly elected president, and also a little bit of a perspective question about how the new parliament composition would be able to perform. My question is, how much do you foresee in this kind of political setting the willingness to push this kind of reform agenda? Are there clear signals about that, or counter signals? How does it look?
Like, the keyword in Ukraine now is uncertainty, and just today an opinion piece was published that I wrote like a few days ago about like potential scenarios for Ukraine, and they range from the most negative scenario, which is still possible, that could result in, for example, trying to go back from geopolitical choice of going closer to the European Union and to Euro-Atlantic cooperation, and this scenario could result in another bloody conflict in the country. And on another side of the spectrum, like, we could have an absolutely positive scenario when the president really tries to do what he promised to his voters, new president, and he finds those people that have good reputation and who could negotiate with international partners, who could conduct good policies, and they together could really find this political will that was lacking for many basic reforms during the last 5 years. So when we add to this spectrum parliamentary elections, it becomes even more complicated, as president wants to have early elections in July. There will be like certainly he wants to have more representation in the parliament by his supporters, because he still has a lot of political capital. He, in the second round, 73% of voters supported him, despite his lack of any political experience before December 2018. So there are different scenarios, but the most realistic one, I believe, is that if you just have public trust and you do not have enough capacity, and you have those established political elites, oligarchs that controlled the system for 25 years, you could not change everything very successfully and overnight, even if you have the best intention. So the most realistic scenario, in my opinion, is that there will be a very fragmented parliament, and they will try to push Ukraine closer to parliamentary republic from the republic that is technically, constitutionally parliamentary presidential, but president usually tries to have more authority than it is envisioned in the constitution. So we expect that this year will be very volatile in terms of political powers, and this will be also very complicated for our international partners to find the right interlocutors in the government, just try to understand who is responsible for what, who will be responsible for key policy areas, and who really has an influence on policy making and who doesn't.
So let's say, as you say, volatility and uncertainty, but also a moment where there is a lot of potential in terms of transformation of the society and transformation of the legislative system, or maybe even transformation, as Marek is pointing out, from a presidential system to a parliamentary system. So let's say that the fact that there are these two elections a few months from each other might lead to a new debate on the ground. Marek, do you want to add anything else about new economic challenges that you might see ahead in those scenarios besides the reforms?
Oh, I would say that most of economic challenges is one way or another related to reform agenda. One of the key challenges is the question of both fiscal and balance of payment sustainability. Ukraine in the coming 2-3 years will have a large debt repayment, which is challenge both for public finance and balance of payment. Of course, this requires whoever will be in the new government and whatever will be political color of this government to have a realistic approach to these challenges, meaning that fiscal responsibility must be continued or even further tightened, that country must continue cooperation with the IMF and other donors, because otherwise it will become bankrupt quite quickly, and also must look for resolving those problems, which sometimes are not purely macro, they are rather structural or institutional, but ultimately, they have macroeconomic consequences. Let me give one example: privatization. This was definitely the lacking component of reforms in the past 5 years. And here is this huge potential for improving efficiency, boosting growth, bringing more foreign investment, but also some additional proceeds for the budget, which can lead to decreasing the burden of the public debt, which is huge. It's over 60% of GDP for a country like Ukraine. It's really very, very high. And if successful privatization on fair basis and transparent basis with participation of foreign investors succeeds, then it can help on this many fronts, also improve image, investment image of the country.
Maybe a little bit provocative here, because it seems to me like a little bit of a classic recipe that we are hearing from your side, the structural reforms and, you know, change in the legislation, and then, of course, privatization and so on. Is that really the only recipe that a country like Ukraine could embark? I mean, if you are speaking about efficiency, but if you're also speaking about possibility to give better services to the population, not to dismantle the welfare system that probably would need reform as well, and so on. We are also speaking about income generating activities for the government. And obviously, I'm not by far trying to hint that the system should stay the same of 30 or 40 years ago. But I wonder if privatization of certain assets is the only solution, or if there can be an effective use of public resources or public assets in a way that is still competitive and subject to the rules of law and the rules of the market, but not necessarily again reproduce the vicious circle that we've been seeing in other places, where you privatize, you have a short-term cash flow for the government, but then when this cash flow of the government is gone, you are basically set with the public assets that are impoverished, and they need to either raise taxes or lower the level of the services. So I wonder if this model is the model that is to be reproduced endlessly in this kind of situations, or can we be a little bit more creative in this kind of environments? I'm sorry, I kind of being a little bit provocative and going a little bit beyond my role of moderator here, but I'm really curious, especially in transition countries or post-Soviet countries, how to deal with this kind of baggage, which is heavy baggage when it comes to history, but where as well, let's say, time has matured, I think, after 30 years from 1989 to and 91 to start to think about also other ways, that is not just a binary way of saying is going back to planned economy or going forward to a market economy, but you know, things a little bit more complicated in 2019.
Let me answer your question. Giuseppe, I would not say endless, because I am, according to my memory, privatization was stopped in Ukraine some 15 years ago or longer. So, and except very few cases, it was never conducted in really open, transparent way, open to all investors, including foreign investors. So basically, we cannot speak about continuation. And also another, I would say, reaction is that economic science is maybe not so rigorous as, I would say, some natural sciences as mathematics and physics, but still based on some, I would say, obvious relation and interrelation. So we cannot, search endlessly something non-orthodox. And the realities are that in non-economy, state ownership, especially in commercial sectors, I don't say now about public services, but I'm talking about business sector, is not more effective than private sector. And especially in countries of former communist countries, especially in former Soviet countries, that there is a big problem with effectiveness of the state apparatus of state. We just discussed this question. And in country which is has so much problem with vested interest, rent-seeking, oligarchy, actually this is now another stream of debate about Ukraine, is how to fight corruption. And quite many changes was introduced here, introduced in various new institutions. But if we look for source of corruption, actually the state ownership and some sort of mixed ownership, because there is many companies where minority stake belongs to private owner, oligarch, let's say. Majority stake belongs formally to the state, but actually this company is managed by those oligarchs in their interest. So this is, we can dismantle this kind of myths, and I think this is a very important part of the reform, which was neglected, I think, for political reasons for quite a long time. But finally, this is one of the remaining reserves of the effectiveness of the system. And I am not against public services. On the contrary, I think Ukraine must do a lot of work to improve public services like healthcare, education, basic technical infrastructure, etc. But to do so, this requires first to have resources, and part of these resources can come from privatization. And second, it also should concentrate government its effort on the task and function, which basically cannot be done by market, or not entirely by market. And business activity like production of steel or production of electricity or some transport services can be done by private sector under the proper regulation, government regulation. So I think that is absolutely clear from economic point of view that this is right.
Kili, maybe you want to add something to this issue and also trying to conclude as well.
I should say that really we must look on privatization in Ukraine more in terms of anti-corruption and in terms of making political system like more transparent and honest, and for longer term development of Ukraine. Ukraine is on the bottom list of corruption perception index. We are a very corrupt country, and unfortunately, and when we have state-owned enterprises, we have the source of financing of this political corruption, and in fact, it is the sort of investment cycle when those parasites that are involved in the political corruption, they invest into buying votes, for example, in single mandate districts. Then they build factions in the parliament. Then they join the coalition. Then they get some positions in ministries, and those ministries are appointing CEOs of state-owned enterprises, and then these CEOs are just milking out these enterprises by buying from offshore companies or selling to offshore companies, and just trying to have return on this political investment. So it is a even bigger problem than economic inefficiency of those enterprises or potential proceeds that state budget could get. Without destroying this pool of financial resources for political corruption, we will not have good governance in the country. We will still have this mix of those oligarchs that at least have some production capacities and some employees, and those real parasites that are just milking out state-owned enterprises.
So we come back basically to the first point we started this conversation, which was about reforming the system in Ukraine in order to have a system that is not only more efficient economically, but basically where rule of law and corruption are fought for. Thank you for listening to this installment of the backstage series of The Sounds of Economics, and I would like to invite you to see our website where we have an array of blogs and publications also on the issue of Ukraine, and they can be found at www.bruegel.org. Thank you very much, and until next time, bye-bye.